Welcome to Kicking It with Raphael. I'm your guest host, Mark Serber, as Raphael continues to kick it on vacation. And unfortunately, no Zach Goldman today, as he's running around London like a madman, getting ready for the start of the Premier League season. But we have an awesome show for you today, as first we will talk the Champions League playoffs with Rob Stone of Fox Sports 1. We then caught up with Portland play-by-play man Christian Miles to discuss all things Timbers. And finally, you will hear from Elise LaHue, the general manager of the Chicago Red Stars, gives her take on the first season in the National Women's Soccer League. So let's get right to it, starting with Rob Stone. Now on the line, it's a pleasure to welcome on Fox Sports 1's Rob Stone to talk a little Champions League playoffs. And first of all, Rob, thank you for joining us. And the pick of the bunch has to be AC Milan versus PSV and Arsenal versus Fenerbahce. Which of the two is a more juicier encounter for you?
That's a good one. Probably the AC Milan matchup. I just have this weird feeling that AC Milan is kind of a sleeper in this season's Champions League, and yeah, obviously it's asking a lot of them to go deep when they're starting where they're starting here in August. But you know, the Balotelli addition has worked out very well. It's been scandal free so far. He hasn't made a whole lot of headlines outside of what his pet. I think, or something like that, and you know, if he can get a combination going up top and get other players involved, not just Mario, I think AC Milan is a team that can really make some headway. And the Italian league, Serie A, needs that. You know, Juventus has kind of carried the torch the last 2 years. Inter Milan has really dropped off. They need an AC Milan to pick things up and kind of carry that torch with the pride that they have in the past. It's been some down times for Italian soccer, and I think it's going to start swinging in an upward direction for you.
So you have AC Milan beating PSV. Philippe Coquelin is a very good young squad. Do you think there's any chance that they can overrun this Milan midfield?
How do they overrun? Can they challenge it? Absolutely. Can they push it? Certainly, yeah. But that's why they have two games. Have things sort out. I've always loved, you know, the PSV Eyes Open of the world. You know, I feel bad that Ajax hasn't been that kind of world power that they used to be in the Cruyff day and age and some of those other legends that have run through there. So I'd like to see that be, you know, try to pick themselves up. But they always have enough teams in there to challenge some of the quote unquote big boys in the big league in Europe. PSV Eyes Open strikes me as one of those teams where on paper you say, all right, we should beat them, but you don't want to be matched up with them if you can help it.
Exactly, exactly. Now moving on to Arsenal versus Fenerbahce. This is a Turkish side with Musa Sal and Pierre Webbo up top. And they also have the likes of Bruno Alves and Raul Mirales also in their ranks. Do they have the quality that they can shock Arsenal and perhaps expose them for their inability to bring players into the squad despite all the money that Arsenal claimed that they were planning to spend this summer?
Yeah, that's a whole other subject right there. When you talk about money, you know, a couple of the Turkish clubs haven't been shy to open up the checkbook in the last couple of years. And they've almost kind of taken a page from Major League Soccer, where they bought some of these players who may be, quote-unquote, on the downside of their career. But guys, at least in my eyes, still have a couple good seasons left in them. So good legs, wonderful intelligence and leadership. And you've seen that in a handful of the Turkish clubs that, you know, what Drogba and company did last year, just on the cusp of moving on really well. So I think it's a great job. If I'm an Arsenal fan, I'm a little leery right now where we stand. All the talk, that's all it's been, is talk that we're going to go out and get these guys, get it. And that's great. Talk is part of it, but the execution has been lacking. And I don't see this club having really upgraded itself from last season. And last season, you know, was a struggle for Arsenal and the standard that they have for that club. I in no way, at this juncture of this conversation, being a team that can threaten the top three in the Premiership.
So for Arsenal, it's going to be very tough. There were talks about the fact that they might get Luis Gustavo for around $25.5 million. How much would he help them, considering that they've been missing the likes of Song since he went to Barcelona?
Well, bodies right now. They need talent anywhere they can get them. It's not like they're overloaded at any one real position. So anything they can do to upgrade a one or a two spot across the board for them helps them out. You know, this is a team that needs depth. They need guys who can make a difference and put some fear in you. And right now, I don't think a lot of people fully fear Arsenal. And I think that's the ardent Arsenal support who feel that way as well. I think they're really getting at the point where they're frustrated now. I think they dealt with it last year, and it was all right. But now the fact that they're talking about it but not acting on it, I think it's really got to set off a lot of the Arsenal supporters.
So do you see Fenerbahce taking this one and possibly knocking Arsenal out before they even make it to the first round of the Champions League?
Yeah, would it surprise me, no. Do I see it happening? No. I think in the end, Arsenal is Arsenal, and meaning that they are a class organization that belongs in these tournaments and belongs in the later stages of these. But, you know, the way their preseason has gone, and with, you know, the start of the league coming this weekend, you know, there's distractions. Are they going to be able to sign guys like we talked about? And if so, that takes time to incorporate them into your lineup as well. Would it surprise me? No, but I think Arsenal will be able to move on.
All right, so it's going to be Arsenal and Milan of those two ties, according to Rob Stone, moving on to the group stages of the Champions League. And Rob, before we let you go, I know you're very busy. Tell us what's coming up on Fox Sports 1.
Well, those two games we just discussed. We'll have them Tuesday and Monday of next week and the following week as well. So plenty of Champions League, Europa League activities coming up on the brand new Fox Sports 1. There's the brand new Fox Soccer Daily Show as well. FA Cup activities will start firing up probably a little bit more in the new year. There's U.S. Women's National Team activities in early September when they take on Mexico. So for those that don't think, you know, soccer is a priority at the Fox Networks, they're severely wrong. A lot of soccer, a lot of CONCACAF Champions League in prime time as well. So soccer is a huge priority for the brand new network. And if I was a gambler now, which I'm not, but I would anticipate that there's going to be plenty more soccer to be coming to the network within the next 6 to 18 months.
And before we let you go, just say you hit on the CONCACAF Champions League. Is this the year that an MLS club wins it?
Man, I hope so. I've actually really started to enjoy this tournament. In years past, it kind of confused me. I just didn't understand why it was happening in the middle of the season. It always seemed like it was an inconvenience to the MLS team. And also the fact that the MLS club didn't really lay out their strongest rosters for these games as well. But now I think MLS and the clubs, which is important because both need to be on the same page, realize that this is an event that we need to win as a league. It doesn't matter who it is, you know, if it's LA or Houston, you know, Kansas City, whoever is playing in it, we want to see them succeed and win to show a regional strength. You know, I think we're doing that with our national team, clearly, in the fact that Mexico and U.S. are 1A and 1B, but club-wise, I still feel that the Mexican club has a higher approval rating, if you will, over Major League Soccer. The MLS needs that big trophy. They need that to kind of put on their mantle, pound on their chest, and say, look, guys, we are better than you. We can compete with you, and we can talk to you when it matters. It's hugely important for MLS. This year it happened, and just too much weird stuff happened. Just sort that out, and I'm not sure this is the year, but I think that year is coming within the next 2 to 3.
Perfect. Well, Rob Stone, thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you on Fox Sports 1 and the return of the Champions League.
Thank you, Mark.
We now switch our attention back over to this side of the pond, and we're very lucky to be joined by Portland Timbers play-by-play man Christian Miles. And Christian, first of all, I've heard nothing but great things ever since you've returned to your hometown to broadcast the Portland Timbers. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No worries, Serby. Anything for an old friend.
Oh, greatly appreciate it. It's wonderful to talk to you as always. The Timbers currently in fourth place of a very tight race in the Western Conference. And under their new coach, Caleb Porter, they've been playing a brand that's been titled Porter Ball, What exactly does that style entail?
Well, it entails, you know, to use the in-vogue term, possession with a purpose and high pressing. It's a very tactical term, one that, quite frankly, Coach Porter is not too fond of. He feels that it attracts attention to him as opposed to what he's trying to do and put the attention on his players, because they're the ones going out there and playing this supposed Porter ball. It's a philosophy of football. It's very much a possession-oriented, a modern-day type of football that's predicated on a lot of the continental European styles that you see overseas. So it's entertaining. It can be at sometimes very attack-minded, and it's one that's worked so far for Portland, even though they have hit a bit of a lull as of late.
Well, speaking of lulls, they're coming off of that heartbreaking loss to RSL in the U.S. Open Cup semifinals, but still plenty to play for. With everything so tight in the Western Conference, what do they have to do to stay in the playoff race, and where will Portobello get them? Will it get them there?
I think it will get them there, Serby. They got to score some goals, and that's their problem. Portland has been hit by a bit of a goal drought as of late. It's very much a situation where the results don't reflect the performances. It's a team that's carved open chance after chance. I believe sincerely that they deserved more against Real Salt Lake in that semifinal loss last Wednesday in Salt Lake City. They put on good performances against Vancouver. They've had a slew of real physical, hard-nosed opponents, and Porter ball it's really turned into almost like a WWF, or as Caleb Porter himself liked to say, American football in the last month or so. And that's something that they're trying to adapt to right now. But the race is so tight in the MLS Western Conference. When you look at the table, you've got the top seven separated by 8 points in Portland with a few games in hand on the three teams above them. You know, a lot of movement could be made this weekend. They could move as high as the second position. So really, as we enter the final third of the season, Portland's poised really to go on a good run right now, I believe.
Well, they had those 16 games since May 25th. You talk about it being like American football, so they must have been exhausted. Finally had the weekend off. How much is that going to help this team going into the final 12 games of the season?
You know, I think actually Coach Porter was reiterating this during the break, so to speak, over the past weekend. It was a good time for them, and they've had so many games against those really physically demanding type of opponents. It's a chance for them to recharge their batteries, take a weekend off, reflect, and then come out. And this week in training, they've really come out with renewed vigor, a little high energy in some of the training matches, and trying to gear themselves up, because they've got a massive amount of Western Conference games, notably of which three more against Real Salt Lake, a team that they're going to get very familiar with here just in the month of August, as well as down in October as well. So it's a team that it has a resiliency, Serby. It's hard to characterize it. They just have this unwavering belief. If they get down, they know they're going to score goals. They know they're going to come back. They're very, very difficult to break down. So the team spirit is the overriding strength of this team, and a lot of that, and the belief in that team, comes from the top in Caleb Porter.
Well, Caleb Porter, unfortunately, have to bring this up, was the head coach when the U.S. U-23s failed to qualify for the Olympics. What lessons did he take from that he's now using at Portland that's allowing them to be successful?
You know, that's a tough one to answer. It's a very good question. I think it's central to Caleb's philosophy, and after spending a few hours talking to the man, it's not to let the highs get too high and the lows get too low. And that's one of his patented statements. He wants us to get an even keel. Things did not go the way he envisioned, but it's a very difficult circumstance to be in when you've got all these kids together for such a brief amount of time. And surely they could have done better, but they didn't. And victimized by, you know, some poor finishing and some lacks of concentration. And it's development for Caleb Porter to come into the game and make those extra fine-tuned adjustments that you have to make, because, as we know, I think one of the most essential factors in coaching in the professional ranks, whether it be in Major League Soccer, whether it be in Serie A or the Premier League, it's attention to detail, and Caleb Porter has it in spades.
Now, speaking of detail, he's got a lot of great individual players to work with. One of them I want to talk to you about is Rodney Wallace, who's a player that I actually went to school with back in Maryland, but he chose to play for his native Costa Rica. Did the U.S. miss out by not nabbing Wallace when they had the chance?
Yes. Based on the season that he's having with Portland, he's been absolutely superb. He's about 4 goals campaign. He's turned into one of the best left-sided midfield players, I believe, in the league right now. He hasn't had a good consistent run out. He's been called up so frequently with Costa Rica World Cup qualifying as well as the Gold Cup. But now he's starting to get about three games under his belt since his return, and we're starting to see the Rodney Wallace of old. And it's interesting to see his evolution as a player. I remember him coming out of Maryland and going to DC United, where he was used primarily as a left back, but he brings a certain balance to the left-hand side and overall to the scope of midfield, and he adds a penetration. He's able to get in behind. He's got pace. He's got a great nose for a goal. It's a great, valuable attacking dimension to have coming from midfield.
Well, certainly, we talk about the U.S. and how they're gaining depth, rather, and it seems like that's a player they really lost out on for depth, either in that outside back or the midfield. Moving on now to another defender, and Andrew Jean-Baptiste. He was on loan at the Los Angeles Blues last year, a team that I covered. There were real questions about his maturity. He's certainly getting the playing time this year with Portland, but has he grown enough to be the ultimate professional, and can he really fulfill his true potential? We've already seen some of it, like the goal he scored against the Galaxy.
Andrew Jean-Baptiste's rate of progression and improvement has a lot to do with his maturity, and he's grown leaps and bounds this season, and arguably has emerged into one of the best center backs on the roster for Portland. He's really profited from the wisdom and experience from Pamudu Ka, who was acquired in May overseas, and Ka's experience at 33 years of age. He's played in Holland, he's played in Norway and Scandinavia. He's seasoned, he knows how to play the game, and that's the difficult thing. People forget, Andrew Jean-Baptiste is only 21 years of age, and playing the position that he plays in the center of defense is very cerebral. It's as much mental as it is physical. And with Andrew, he's got all the physical tools. He's an athletic specimen right now, a physical specimen, as they say. He's strong. He's very good in the air. He's athletic and cover up. He's learning the art of positioning right now, and the rate of improvement that he's shown in that department has been the biggest transformation for me. And as he scores goals on set pieces and gets better in his positioning and is an all-around defender, it's just bred his confidence. And this guy really has an unlimited future. There were some question marks. Does he have the head for the game? And even Caleb Porter had some doubts. But he has, quote, as coaches said, really turned a corner in the last 2 or 3 weeks, unquote. So his future is unlimited, I believe, and he could really turn out to be a real solid pro in this league for years to come.
Well, moving on to a player who he already had turned the corner a long time ago, played in the Copa Libertadores with Deportes Tolima, and the only thing he's yet to do in the MLS is score, but the Colombian brings so much to the table, along with Diego Vieri, who does score goals. What makes these two players so dangerous for Portland?
You're talking of Jose Valencia?
No, Diego Chara.
Oh, Diego Chara. Yes, Diego Chara is the heart and soul of this team. He, along with Will Johnson, in the center of the park. But Diego Chara is one of the unsung heroes as well, and almost to the extent where Ozzy Alonso was receiving little accolades in his early days in Seattle. Chara covers immense amount of ground. He knows when to tackle. He never saw a tackle he didn't like, is my saying. He likes to. He gives such a balance with Will Johnson, and his presence coming deep from midfield allows Johnson to bomb on and get more involved in the attack and utilize his talents. They have almost a symbiotic, telepathic understanding, and I really do believe when you play the system that Portland has, when you have those two holding players in the center of the park, you need that kind of understanding, and you need different types of players, and that's exactly what Chara is. He likes to do the dirty work. He'll get stuck in, and the man is incredible. I've seen him make 40-yard lung-bursting runs in the 89th minute. His fitness is off the charts, and so is his toughness. So it's hard to find anything negative with his play, and he's arguably been Portland's most valuable player this season.
Now, despite moving from a Copa Libertadores side in Deportes Tolima to the MLS, is he still getting looks in from the Colombian national team?
That remains to be seen. He certainly should. The Colombian setup would be wise, and a lot of South American coaches don't rate Major League Soccer too highly and don't really give the players coming out of Major League Soccer enough of the credit that they do deserve. And I think that's the case with Diego Chara. If you just watch him as a footballer, as a soccer player, whatever you want to call it, this guy can play. He can play at the international level. I'm convinced of it. And he has a head for the game as well. He doesn't bomb on and lunge into tackles. He's judicious. He knows when to make his tackles. He knows when to make his runs. He provides ample cover and has a great understanding of the game. And it's only going to get better. And certainly, I think I could see him playing a role for Colombia at some point down the road.
And how about Diego Vieri? What does he bring to the table for this club?
Valeri is the creative magician. He is, you know, he has that extra something that you want out of a creative playmaker. You know, it's the fantasista, as they call it in Italy, whatever you want to say. The man has an extra degree. The game slows down for him. He seems to have a step ahead in his mind each and every time he steps out there. He can flip that killer ball through. He's got a good finish on him and a great head for the game and almost has that free roll. He's had a little problem with consistency this season, game in and game out, and that may be indicative of Portland as a whole. They really haven't put together a solid, convincing 90 minutes yet, and Valeri, though, is a big part of that. They're going to need his ability to break through and break down defenses because a lot of times Portland is facing opposition that like to sit behind the ball and dare Portland to break them down. That's when you need your creative ingenuity to be at its best, and Diego Valeri is the fulcrum of that for Portland.
And so with these players, if they're playing at their best, where do you see this team finishing in the Western Conference this season, which right now, as you already alluded to, is just so, so tight?
You know, it's the Wild West right now, and it's really a tough one to call. I definitely see Portland, you know, in the playoff picture, and they will make the playoffs. I guarantee that. The question is, where will they land? And, you know, from their position up to Real Salt Lake, there's four teams separated by 6 points, but Portland have a few games in hand. Their mettle will be tested. Big game this weekend against FC Dallas, who aren't the team that they were at the beginning of this season, starting to languish, but nevertheless still in the playoff picture and can actually overtake Portland with a win. You have always had to worry about players like Blas Perez coming back from international duty, but games against Real Salt Lake and Vancouver Whitecaps and Real Salt Lake a couple of other times are going to be integral. So it's tough to say right now, but if I had to guess, and you know, you held a gun to my head here, Serby, I'd say, you know, a top three finish is well within reach.
Well, top three, you heard it here first from the Portland Timbers play-by-play man, Christian Miles. Christian, it's always a pleasure. We could talk soccer as we have for hours at time beforehand, but thank you so much for coming on Kicking It with Rafael, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
No worries, Serby. Thanks.
Into the National Women's Soccer League, where we are joined by Chicago Red Stars General Manager Elise LaHue. And Elise, first of all, thank you so much for joining us. Chicago will not make the playoffs this year, but congratulations to you and the league on what has to be said is a great first season.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Glad to be here with you. Didn't make the playoffs this year, but we put up a good fight, came really close, and just proud of what the team did this year and what we have to build on for next season.
And from a Red Stars perspective, what has been the club's experience both on the field and behind the scenes?
Well, I think we're in a unique position because we were around for 2 years of women's professional soccer, former pro league, and then took a couple years where we were basically semi-pro. So we were still here, but a little bit off of fans' radar and local Chicagoans' radar. So this year was a chance for us to get back out there, get back on the map, and let people know that women's professional soccer is back in Chicago.
Speaking of women's professional soccer, it seems like every time it returns, every reincarnation of the Women's Professional League, there's always talk of how things are going to be handled differently, how they're going to be done right. But it seems like this year the National Women's Soccer League got it right. What are the biggest differences from this league and the other versions of women's professional soccer in the past? And what have the clubs done that attendance for even the likes of the last place Washington Spirit remains so high?
Yeah, I think, you know, for your first question, having U.S. Soccer Federation involved has been huge for the league and for the teams. They provide so much support just from a front office perspective. And then into, you know, actually dealing with some player salaries to have allocated players, and it's not just from the U.S., but from Canada and from Mexico as well, with them being able to bring on those federations, it's a major salary help for us to have those players' salaries paid for. So it helps us to bring costs down. And then, again, like I said, having them sort of manage the front office, they're really involved from the ground up with this league. So it's not just, an outsider thing saying, hey, yeah, we support the league. They're really putting their money where their mouth is, and they're here and they're behind us, and they're a major player for this league to succeed.
And speaking of the Federation, other than them, what else needs to be done so that the league can continue to thrive in the years to come and we don't have the same kind of fate that we've suffered in the other league after just 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, I think it's always really easy for finances to get out of control, and you get weary owners that end up spending a lot more than they anticipated. So that's another thing, I think, with U.S. Soccer, sort of laying this groundwork, and all teams are on the same page. We're in the same boat. We know what we want to spend. We don't want to go over that. We're trying to take care of our players while at the still same time, paying attention to our revenues and spending in accordance with what's coming in. So on the flip side, I know you had mentioned attendance. I think most of the teams have been pleasantly surprised this year in terms of attendance. We came in with modest expectations and wanted to be able to have something that we could build off of. So I think for every team, and you mentioned the Washington Spirit, we just played there recently. And I've been at every venue, so I've gotten to see firsthand what every team's doing. And it's been phenomenal, the support that teams are getting out there in terms of attendance. And that's the most important thing for us. We need fans at the game. So getting that support gives us a good groundwork to build off of.
And speaking of what the fans have gotten to witness this year, which team has impressed you the most? Among the playoff contenders, the final standings aren't even decided yet. With just one game to go, only 3 points separate the first place from the fourth place team.
Yeah, I'd actually have to say our Midwest friends, Kansas City. They were sort of a dark horse to start out, but once we saw their allocation and saw the team that they put together, I think at least us in Chicago, we always knew that they were going to be a contender, and they've really proven to do that this season. So I'm still putting them as the favorites to win the championship this year. I think they've done something special down there, and will continue to do so into the playoffs.
And from the likes of Kansas City to around the country, which individual players have made their mark this season, not only on your Red Stars, but also in the NWSL?
Yeah, I think, starting with the Red Stars, we're really a group effort here. We didn't get, we didn't have the minutes from U.S. Women's National Team players this season due to some injuries that most of the other teams had. So we were in a very unique position compared to other teams. I think Lori Kolupny for us, she never fails to impress me. She's a phenomenal player. I put her at one of the top three in the league. She's just a workhorse day in and day out, and does so very quietly and modestly. So I always place her very high. I think in mentioning Kansas City, Lauren Holiday has really impressed this year, and I know a lot of the other players from teams that play against her have said that as well, that they see her as league MVP this year. So those are two players that stand out to me right now.
And I know you still have one more game to play, but what are the early plans for the offseason for the Chicago Red Stars to improve the club and overall to improve the league as well for next season?
Yeah, I like to say we never really have an offseason. We just go day to day, and it's always so much planning to be done. And we've been thinking about 2014 for a long time now, even though we're in the midst of 2013. So things are full speed ahead right now. We're already selling season tickets for next year, planning our venue, just putting all the revenue plans in place, looking at players for next season. So there's really no off days for us. We just keep the ball rolling, and we want to continue to grow on this, which we think we have something special here with this league.
Elise, we're so excited to not only see the NWSL thrive this year, but also to see the Chicago Red Stars thrive as well. Thank you so much for your time and for joining us here on Kicking It with Raphael.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you, Mark.
That was Elise LaHue, the general manager of the Chicago Red Stars in the NWSL. And that will do it for this week's edition of Kicking It with Raphael. Hope you enjoyed it. And in the words of Ian Dark after that famous goal against Algeria, go, go, USA! As we wish our boys the very best in their friendly with Bosnia this evening. Once again, thank you for kicking it with us, with or without Raphael.